touchdown machine for the Houston Cougars.
Sasser again, just kind of taking over right now.
That's NBA stuff right there. He is a baller.
Stick it in your pipe and smoke it, baby.
Yes! Welcome to the Scott Moore Podcast. First off, since I feel like it's been a little while since I've done this, I want to say at the top, a big, big thank you to those of you who made the absolutely brilliant decision to listen to this episode of our little podcast as we are back in our usual football recap spot here on Halloween night talking about a decisive win by the Houston Cougars over USF from this past Saturday and previewing our last matchup with a certain horse mascot school up Interstate 45 in football. Of course, later this week we will be back because we have a couple basketball seasons that are we're pretty excited about here that we're going to talk about. Plenty of fall sports topics as well that we're not going to be able to hit tonight because it would just frankly be too much for one episode, and I think all topics deserve their space a bit more probably than one big episode where by the end of it Dustin and I are pretty beat up would allow. And for the first time in almost a week and a half, I am not using the royal we to describe us here at the podcast or using it to describe anything other than the usual host of the show. The gang's all here. I'm going to spare the world my rendition of Peaches and Herbs, Reunited and It Feels So Good. But 100% of your regular podcast hosts are present and accounted for tonight. Dustin, a long time no talk. How are you doing, bud?
Hey, man, I'm doing well. I'm good. Hey, I'm glad to be talking to you again. It is, what, three episodes in a row without the two of us actually sitting down and talking to each other. It was like, went to my phone and I was like, oh, wait, I'm calling Samuel. Man, he's not one of my recent calls here. It's been a minute. So glad to be talking to you.
We were not previewing the Memphis game. That would have been the bye week episode? Can't remember. It's been so long, but glad to be back with you, bud.
For sure. I guess the Navy preview, or Navy. I don't know, midweek. I'm not even sure. It was some far off episode, but more importantly, we've got lots of Cougar football to talk this episode. As you mentioned, gonna leave the hoops previewing and the all sports catch up to later in the week. But do want to talk about a USF win that was, as well as looking forward to SMU. So yeah, I guess we always jump around. I shouldn't even be talking to Sam, I know, because we always start each game recap with how the game was won, and I know that's more your deal. So we got the win, Sam. Tell us how Houston did it.
Yeah, obviously.
Oh, no. Oh, I was going
to say, Dustin.
I jumped several things there. Hold on. It's been so long since we've done an episode together. I no longer have any idea what order we do things in. This is an absolute shambles. But
the train is already off the tracks. We're going to power through. We're going to keep recording. We're not going to try to redo this 2 minute, 43 seconds of audio, but I'll keep it quick.
We've come too far.
We've gone too far. We can't turn around. We're crossing this stream. Got to mention at the top, of course, we are, I don't know if they'll be proud to have us after that introduction on my part, but I'm sure they will be proud members of the 1012 Network talking all things Big 12 over there. The great 1012 podcast, as well as a number of really great individual podcasts. This has been a very high entertainment value season for Big 12 football. Imagine hoops and everything else that the league has in store will be no less high entertainment. So follow them at TEN12 Network on Twitter. Get acclimated and get updated on our future conference before the Cougars play a game here in about 9 months. And of course, we are brought to you by the good folks at the good brand Home Field Apparel, homefieldapparel.com. Get your Cougar collection refreshed with Home Field's recent additions from this year. If you haven't already done so, really missing out. Some great vintage tees, always the most comfortable, always the coolest looking threads. You're going to be the talk of your section, the talk of your tailgate, the talk of your Houston Cougar friend group, as it were. So if you want to not just look better, like I said, not just wear comfortable threads, like I said, if you want to save a little dough as well, in your first order, 15% off. That's 15% off with the promo code Holman12, like Scott and Holman. You're going to enter that promo code Holman12 at checkout. Save 15% off your first order. Look good doing it. Hundreds of schools outside of your Houston Cougars. You're going to look good no matter what your apparel needs are. That's homefieldapparel.com. We're proud to hawk them on the show because they make really darn good looking tees. But get to the meat of the episode. The reason I would imagine nearly all of you are listening out there talking about a second straight convincing conference win by the Houston Cougar football program. And happily, kind of like you alluded to, Dustin, for the second week in a row, the summary of how this one was won by the Houston Cougars will be fairly brief and not too dramatic. I will say, though, out of the gates, this one looked like it could have been a lot closer. USF got the ball first in the game, did punt on their opening drive, gave the Cougars the ball back in decent field position, thanks to a somewhat questionable kick catch interference call. Weirdly enough, a kick catch interference call that was USF's only accepted penalty of this game, but I'll leave that one alone for now. The Cougars would open the scoring for the game on that drive, a third and goal completion from Clayton Tune to Tank Dell. The Bulls would take the lead later, though, with two quick touchdowns in the first quarter. Both were Brian Battee touchdown runs in the next 3 to 4 minutes of game action after that Cougar opening touchdown. Cougar defense just looked absolutely powerless to stop the Bulls offense there, but that USF lead would be short-lived. The Cougs marched down the field and tied the game on Stacey Snead's first touchdown run of the game. And I would say if this game had any inflection point, I think it was USF's first possession of the second quarter, where they got into field goal range, pretty well into field goal range, but Spencer Schrader missed wide right pretty badly, and the visitors, I would say, never really had a good chance to take the lead for the remainder of the game. The Cougar offense didn't really meet much resistance throughout this one from their opponents. They would respond with a deep touchdown connection from Tune to Dell. Again, another touchdown pass later in the quarter, the last minute of the half, put the Cougars ahead 28-14. Also, appropriately enough, put Tune over 10,000 career pass yards and gave Peyton Sawyer a very deserved first collegiate touchdown reception. And never really was anything super close to a moment of panic afterwards. The Cougs, I would say, did miss a chance to put this one away even earlier. They got the ball to start the third quarter up two scores, but went three and out, was followed immediately by USF's last non-garbage time touchdown drive. Did cut the score to 28-21, but Cougar offense immediately responded with a touchdown drive, capped off by, I would say, if not a season highlight, very close to a season highlight. I would personally put it in my season highlight list. 12-yard Stacey Snead run where the final yard, he literally went through USF senior linebacker Dwayne Boyle. Cougar defense stepped up now with this 14-point lead in the early fourth quarter, got the Bulls offense off the field with a fourth down sack by Chidozie Nwankwo. With the ball back near midfield, the Cougars would basically put this game on ice with a double pass from Tune to Dell. Dell back to Tune, who found Keshawn Carter in the end zone, put the Cougars up three touchdowns. And football was played after that, but I would say that was really it for meaningful game action. The Cougars got the ball back one more time, bled enough of the clock that even a weird mid-drive quarterback change from Clayton Tune to Lucas Coley didn't affect anything other than the point spreads. The Cougars would ultimately win this one 42-27. Dustin, from all of that, what was your biggest takeaway from the Cougs' two-score win over the USF Bulls?
You know, I think my biggest takeaway was that for the first time all year, Houston played basically exactly the game I was expecting them to play. Houston and their opponents both. The Houston defense versus, you know, USF offense matchup. You know, Houston hasn't been a shutdown defense all year, and USF, despite, you know, losing Gary Bohannon, was, you know, we talked about it in the preview, had enough offensive pieces that you didn't expect them to be shut out or anything. And certainly the ease with which the Bulls scored those two first quarter touchdown drives was not what I was expecting. That was pretty troublesome at the time, but kind of, as you mentioned, the Cougs only gave up one scoring drive before garbage time the rest of the way. And then offensively, you expected Houston's offense that seemed like it had figured some things out over the previous five quarters, to have success against one of the worst defenses in FBS football. And you kind of expected Houston would shoot themselves in the foot with penalties from time to time, which they did. But otherwise, they were pretty much scoring at will. So, you know, and then, I guess the penalties thing too. You expected it to be Houston to be fighting the penalties. That's kind of, you know, with the one exception, what they've been doing all year. So that was kind of what you expected too. But yeah, for a season that's been a roller coaster, I think it was maybe nice to have a calm part of the ride where it was just like, yeah, we beat South Florida comfortably but imperfectly. That sounds about right.
And I think for me, even acknowledging that this was a bad defensive opponent, I think it was still important to see on Saturday a continuation of what you saw from the end of the Memphis game through the previous game at Navy. And there were aspects of this overall team performance that you've already talked about that weren't perfect, but I think it's important that very little of that, other than the occasional boneheaded penalty, was on the offensive side of the ball. And I mean, if you exclude the very last possession of each half, where in both cases the situation dictated U of H taking a knee to run out the clock, you only had three empty possessions out of the remaining nine total. And not to mention that one of those three empty possessions was the one where Clayton Tune was taken out mid-drive by Dana Holgorsen once it was very clear U of H had bled enough clock that USF had no chance of coming back, and Lucas Coley came on in relief. And against this opponent, I think that was kind of the dominance we needed to see. We needed to see the smooth ride, kind of like you said. You need to feel some confidence going into this stretch run of the final month of the season, and to finally see a passing offense that for a few weeks now we've, I think, mostly seen has looked like a fifth-year quarterback who isn't just on the same page with Tank Dell, but is on the same page, is consistently finding other guys like Keshawn Carter and Sam Brown, and a rushing attack that has definitely been a bit less consistent, but considering your top two guys these past few games are two redshirt freshmen, I still think you've seen plenty to be encouraged by there, not just from Saturday, but from the games immediately prior. I think, put it this way, if this is a grinded out, closer than expected win, as opposed to the one we're talking about where U of H, there may have been points where the game was close, but on the balance of four quarters, U of H was a significantly better team. I do think both of our tones would be different. I do think it would sound a lot more like the first several weeks of the season than we're talking right now. And I think, even again, acknowledging the warts of this opponent, I think you saw enough on Saturday to talk yourself into, I guess, this team still having something to play for here down the stretch, still being a team that could potentially go 4-0 against the schedule. I'm not saying 4-0 is the likeliest outcome. I'm not predicting 4-0 here, but you've seen how good this team can be. You've started to see proof of concept in the areas that you would hope to see proof of concept. I mean, if this team finishes the year as a good passing offense with maybe a bit of a shaky pass defense, I don't know, Dustin. I don't think that's very different than what I would have expected maybe at the start of the season, with, you know, losing what we lost in the secondary and you just having some defensive question marks and knowing that some key guys aren't playing right now. You know, I don't think if we see this team look somewhat like that down the stretch that I'm feeling the same kind of attitude I felt at the beginning of the season, where I just felt like the team wasn't living up to expectation and wasn't playing its best football. I think there are still tough opponents to go against. There are still much, much tougher tests than Saturday. But I think if you want a reason to be optimistic, I think you can use parts of these past 3 weeks to talk yourself into that.
Yeah, I am just extremely loath to really take any big picture takeaways from this game against a USF team that's pretty bad, especially defensively. But certainly Houston didn't do anything to discourage me from believing that they had some things figured out, which was kind of where I was leaning maybe after the Navy game anyway. And yeah, I mean, I know it's a really bad defense, but man, Clayton Tune did look really good in this game. And like I said, can only prove so much against one of the bottom 10 defenses in FBS football, but just really looks like, this offense is going to actually let Clayton Tune throw the ball around the dang yard a little bit from time to time. Finished 31 of 37 for 380 yards, 4 touchdowns, no picks in this one. And like you mentioned, become the third Houston quarterback to reach the 10,000-yard career passing mark. Became the 132nd quarterback in FBS history to reach 10,000. And, a lot of the schools that have had a 10,000-yard quarterback have had it multiple times. So it's just to say that many schools have never had a quarterback as prolific as Clayton Tune. So it has been, a lot of fun to watch him develop. And it's been an up and down, but he has shown us some incredible things, I think, over his career. And I think that is indicated by how many by over 10,000 yards. Ended up just ahead of Eli Manning on the all-time list after this game. Sam, can you name, I'm curious, the four quarterbacks in FBS football who are ahead of Clayton Tune on the career passing yards, current quarterback, Sam?
Current quarterbacks, like, currently playing.
Current quarterbacks currently playing this season that have more career passing yards than Clayton Tune. There are four of them.
I'm trying to think. The problem is, as I say, a lot of the guys who are starters on really good teams right now are first or second. I know it's not C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young, because those guys just is JT Daniels feels like he's played 10 years. Is JT Daniels one of those guys?
JT Daniels is not. I can probably say, to help you out, probably none of these guys are starting on what I would call a really good team.
All right, just give me these to spare the listeners.
I was gonna say you got one in our conference. If you want to throw one at the last second, one is in the American Athletic Conference.
In the American, that's not John Rex Plumley. It's not Davis Brin.
Holt Nailers.
Holt Nailers has been there forever. Yeah, no, I should have guessed him.
Holt Nailers is actually the current FBS career passing leader. He's just, I think, like less than 100 yards away from cracking the top 20 all time. Wow. Sam Hartman of Wake Forest, Jarrett Doge of Troy, and Charlie Brewer of Liberty are your other four there. But yeah. Good guy, Clayton, too, to get back to the actual subject matter at hand. You know, really, really strong game. Made every throw that you wanted to see. You know, 31 of 37, when I can remember a couple of dropped easy passes, means you get through. You made a lot of passes right on the mark. Tank Dell, you know, amazing as usual. Ho-hum, you know, just torching one of the local schools that didn't recruit him. But, you know, also kind of like you've mentioned, too, Keyshawn Carter, Sam Brown really continuing to impress. They combined for 13 catches for 188 yards and a touchdown in this one. And then, you know, offensively, Stacey Sneed followed up his 100-yard game against Navy with a 10-carry, 60-yard performance, including his first two collegiate TDs. And then Peyton Sawyer, a guy who, you know, chose U of H over some P5 offers back in the day, didn't vault right to the top of the front of the depth chart, stuck with his school, chose not to transfer. He's in his fifth year in the program, finally becoming more a part of the receiver rotation this year. To see him get rewarded with his first career touchdown catch, really cool. And like you said, we got to see a couple of plays. Lucas Coley, Dan Holgerson, saying after the game that he had played well enough in practice to earn his way into being number two on the QB depth chart. Obviously, he didn't start that way at the beginning of the season, just because he is the only other scholarship quarterback besides Clayton Tune, but has now apparently earned his way to number two and got the late game snaps. So excited to see Lucas Coley making the first of what will likely be many more appearances in the red and white.
Yeah, I thought it was also really good, just from an offensive gameplay perspective, that the staff was willing to go pass first at times, because, you know, first and foremost, it was very effective. USF never had an answer for tuning the Cougar passing attack, and I think the looks USF's defense was giving may have at least necessitated a pass-first approach at times. So credit to the offensive staff for doing what worked out of the gate rather than just stubbornly going 50-50 and needing a quarter or two of stuff not working or stuff not working as good as it could to, you know, go with that game plan. And great to see Clayton Tune looking like the quarterback I think we expected going into his final season. It was the second most passing yards and second most passing touchdowns the USF defense has allowed this year. If I had my drives, as much as it was nice to see Lucas Coley finally getting some live game reps, I might have left Tune in that fourth quarter possession where he was pulled late, though I guess I get the desire also not to see Tune get hurt in garbage time. And I think without speaking too much for you, I think we've both always believed that the previous inconsistencies and problems we've seen from this offense were more about the design of the offense, more about the execution around Clayton Tune rather than deficiencies in the game, which is to say he has played perfectly in some of those Cougar losses. It was really cool just to see him surpass that 10,000 career passing yards mark in a game where he played almost flawlessly. One of those three U of H empty possessions I mentioned earlier was a drive on the very first play. Tune threw a ball at Tank Dell, looked perfect, and just went through his hands, and you saw multiple times as the camera panned to him, Tank Dell like hitting his helmet going, "My bad, man, I just absolutely should have caught that." It feels like the offense right now is doing more, not just to give Tune those field stretching throws and dump offs, but I think at times the last 3 weeks, I think we've seen more effective in between there, that range in between your tunnel screens and in between your deep shots, that intermediate range that I think Tune is quite good at. I think has shown an ability to really exploit kind of the soft middle of some of the defenses we've seen recently. Ryan Okoku's did a nice detailed look at his passing spray chart against South Florida, and you know, a lot of the offense was Tune killing USF underneath, but he was also 4-for-4 on throws of 20 yards or more, finished the day with over 10 yards per pass attempt. Again, not your best defensive opponent. I think we've said it pretty clearly to this point, but he was just about perfect on Saturday. You really can't pick any nits in his performance. And I would also, I think, single out the performance of this offensive line. I think that's another really encouraging sign with this offense. I mean, no matter this slate of opponents, in this past three games, this offensive line has allowed a total of 2 sacks, and one of those was that sack fumble against Navy, which I think we would all agree was more of a case of Tune holding the ball a bit too long rather than any specific protection breakdown. If you want to look at it another way, that's 2 sacks over those 3 games compared to 124 pass attempts. And Saturday was the first time this season USF hadn't recorded a single sack. This same defense had 4 sacks in their most recent game prior to this one against Tulane. It was also a season low on tackles for loss as well. And this wasn't because U of H went run heavier, because every pass was out of Clayton Tune's hands in 1 to 2 seconds. I thought there were plenty of longer developing pass plays where Tune had lots of time to survey the field and make his decision, and he consistently had either a clean enough pocket to get the pass off or enough time, enough real estate in front of him to find a good running lane and make something happen with his feet. To me, as great as Clayton Tune was, as much as there are a lot of, you know, good things you could talk about with this offense from Saturday, I think that's the biggest reason for optimism with this offense if you want to talk yourself into it. Talk yourself into this team finishing strong down the stretch. That for all the challenges of the next four opponents, not all four of them, but, you know, a couple of them, I would say SMU and ECU are games that I'm not taking lightly by any stretch. None of those teams have a really fearsome pass rush. And I think you've seen, at least in a few game sample size, with some health and with a pretty steady starting lineup, this offensive line finally start to look like a cohesive unit. And even with the periodic inconsistency in the run game, you alluded to, I think we can still are continuing to see enough from guys like Stacey Snead and Brandon Campbell to feel optimistic about what this running game looks like long term. It's easy to forget because he's been out this year, Dustin. Those two promising redshirt freshmen will be supplemented by one of 2021's top freshman performers in Alton McCaskill Jr. starting next season. That's a really fearsome three-headed monster if you have U of H on the schedule, given what I would say all three guys have shown at times they can do in their young collegiate careers. It wasn't perfect, you know, this so far this year, but it was darn near perfect on Saturday, and I think this is where you want your offense to be going into the final month of the season with a couple of critical road games that I just mentioned looming.
And the other thing I wanted to tack on offensively is just, you know, wanting to see that three-headed monster, that running back going forward. And, you know, a big part of what's going to make that three-headed running back effective is the offensive line in front of it. And kind of like you mentioned, seeing them play their best ball the last three games. Definitely what you want to see from a young offensive line, which has no seniors this year and could potentially return intact in Houston's first Big 12 season next year. So very hopeful to see that both of those units, the running backs and the offensive line, play well the rest of the year going forward. But then defensively, you know, I think maybe more of a mixed bag than the very nice things we just said about the Cougar offense. There was a noticeable lack of three and outs that I maybe expected to see more of in this game. The Bulls only, by my count, had one three and out in this game. Bulls quarterback Katravis Marsh had easily the best game of his collegiate career, which is, I think, less of a bad thing than that sounds like on the surface. You know, if you listen to the preview, I mentioned, you know, a number of reasons why, you know, the you know, he's had a rocky career up until this point, but not an untalented player who probably had the, you know, best chance for success around him in terms of the offensive line and the skill players around him to be successful now, as opposed to, you know, earlier in his career. So, and he's, you know, someone that hasn't had a lot of full games out there. So the fact that he was, you know, the man for this game and had more pieces around him, I think it's, you know, it would have been maybe a little bit surprising if he hadn't had statistically the best game of his career up until this point. But, you know, I kind of, like I said, I think I expected to see more three and outs. I expected to see more, okay, they broke a big play here and there, but, you know, at least, you know, we have drives where we're just stuffing them three plays in a row and making them look like a redshirt sophomore quarterback who doesn't have a whole lot of starting experience. You know, I thought USF's offense was, you know, even like I said, only one scoring drive after the first two before garbage time. But, you know, I think that's kind of throwing a lot of qualifiers on there to say that, you know, ultimately they gave up, three scoring drives to a bad team on its, you know, backup quarterback. And, you know, Brian Battee, after torching U of H on the opening kickoff last year, was, you know, quiet in special teams this year, but electric in the run game, 12 rushes for 106 yards and two scores. Apparently he only got that low a number of touches, but he's been dealing with a lingering groin issue I saw after the game. So honestly, we may have been healthy Brian Battee groin away from this game being a little bit more stressful down the stretch, and kind of that alternate universe that you talked about where this game ends up being a little bit closer than we want it to, and we're, you know, less happy about the result going forward.
Yeah, I think the signs aren't as encouraging the defensive side of the ball. It might be diplomatic on my part, though it was good to see this group have the mental fortitude to bounce back after I think it was undeniably a pretty awful start to the game. And it's worth noting that USF did come to this one as a 1-6 team, but they were a 1-6 team that also had a top 60 SP plus offense. And yeah, that was with Gary Bohannon starting, but you also had some unknown. You didn't know what the Bulls offense was exactly going to look like with Trey Marsh starting at quarterback. And he's seen some action in his career, had, I believe, three career starts prior to Saturday. You saw him in the second half of their last game against Tulane. You still can't spin those two first quarter USF touchdown drives as anything other than bad defense, just period, point blank. The Bulls averaged nearly 18 yards per play, and you'd be hard-pressed to find any part of that start of the game that didn't go really disastrously bad for the Cougars on defense. Was as reminiscent of the Kansas game as I think anything we've seen to date has been. And I think I can speak for both of us and really probably all of Cougar fandom that we'd all prefer that nothing remind us of that Kansas game ever again. Please and thank you. But after those drives, I think you said it earlier, USF only scored on one of their next six possessions. And there were still too many times, even after the Cougars seemed to fix what was causing USF to break a huge gain every time they got to the edge, where it felt like the Cougars secondary was too susceptible to the big pass plays. There were five different USF receivers who had a reception of at least 24 yards on Saturday. And I've been largely optimistic about what we saw, but I gotta say, with a couple of good veteran quarterbacks left in the schedule, you mentioned one of them earlier, Holton Ahlers, on the November schedule, I'm not wildly confident this Cougar secondary is much better than the group we've seen largely struggle this year. There are a lot of aspects of this team's performance that are improving, that are maybe getting closer to season expectation that we've talked plenty about tonight. Secondary, I feel like this kind of is what this group is, that they're going to, you know, get a turnover at times, that they have their moments, but I think we're going to kind of have to hold our breath and hope against some of the more prolific passing offenses left on the schedule. I will say the pressure from the defensive front definitely got better as the game went on. I think maybe the most encouraging sign is what you saw guys in the interior do. Guys like Dot Wonkwo and Latrell Bankston really got pressure on Marsh from the interior, didn't let the Bulls offense do anything easy after that first quarter between the tackles for large stretches of the game. And I think also, I want to single out another guy. I think for the second week in a row, you saw Tabo Wanniki starting at safety, really gave you some impressive veteran presence. That, you know, that tackling, that once you get past the first level of the defense, it's kind of been a bugaboo for this team. You know, I think Wanniki makes you a lot better there. Led the team in solo tackles on Saturday, total tackles as well, after being, I would say, a positive standout the week before against Navy. So it's not all negatives, it's not all bad, but I think fair to say we're not in the exact same place with the Cougar defense than we are with the offense. And that's even acknowledging that this opponent was significantly better on the offensive side of the ball. This opponent was going to, if they were going to test you on either side of the ball, it was going to be the offense. But I don't think, you know, I talked about earlier how, okay, you're starting to see some reason to maybe buy into the offense, getting things figured out more than they did at the start of the season. I don't know if you're there with the defense, or don't know if you can easily get there with the defense, just based on what you saw Saturday.
Yeah, I think as much as you can spin a lot of things positively for the defense, giving up 8 yards per pass attempt and 5 yards per rush against a USF team that was working into its backup quarterback is not the most encouraging defensive performance you're going to see, and certainly with some challenging offensive teams that Houston's going to face down the stretch. Like you mentioned, you know, ultimately it is, you know, one game in the schedule, and it's, you know, at the end of the year, I don't think we're going to remember, you know, if Clayton Tune had quite the game he had offensively, or if, you know, Brian Batie been a little bit healthier, maybe the game is it's a two score game instead of a three score game, is ultimately, you know, I guess only not going to matter so much. And, you know, we've seen the Cougar season up until this point, how much predictive power you really get out of trying to guess how well Houston is going to play next week based on how they played this week. So I'm not sure how much it ultimately is going to mean at the end of the year, but you know, I guess I'll just kind of finish by, you know, reiterating my opening point, which is just to say that it was nice. It was nice to just have a non-stressful win that kind of just went exactly the way we wanted it to. And I'll take the W for all of its imperfections and start looking forward to likely a more challenging game this coming Saturday.
Yeah. Not that important. I don't know if I'm leaving this game feeling any more queasy about this team committing dumb penalties in key moments. I mean, 10 penalties for 95 yards looks bad, and there were some whoppers in there, but I don't know. I'm not going to do an extended rant about officiating, but I think there weren't some great calls in there, and I think I'm kind of incredulous that USF did only one thing worthy of being penalized in four quarters of football. But yeah, kind of nice just the last 2 weeks to not have a stressful football game to talk about, acknowledging for the last time that it's not the very best opponent out there. But I think if the early part of the year taught us anything, it's you just you don't take for granted a nice stress-free win, and that's what we've gotten to come back here and talk about the last 2 weeks. And yeah, not gonna look a gift horse in the mouth there.
All right, and we will go ahead and wrap the game up with our hashtag forward reviews from you, the Twitter followers of the Scott Norman podcast. And you know, you can tell it was a good game, Sam, because if nothing else, pretty much all the forward reviews were optimistic, and people were generally happy with those. So we love to see that. Andrew was really getting way ahead of himself with future 2022 AAC champs, but I like his optimism. Jay said it was nice to see normalcy. Lamar says, we own the Bulls. This was actually the seventh straight win in the head-to-head series for the Cougs over South Florida. And Renee, well aware of Dell coming out of South Florida, not getting recruited by USF, had Dell's revenge on USF.
Yeah, a number of you were feeling that renewed optimism. Diego had the offenses clicking in all caps. Tom K had young receivers maturing nicely. Coug for Life had offenses looking good. And our good friend Sean had play calling has, he used the quotes, quote, mostly improved. I don't think I didn't notice the quotes, Sean. But Clayton Toon, I think, deservedly got some reviews here. Ray had Toon was really good. Owen had Toon made great throws. And Renee had Clayton record books Toon as his forward review.
More people happy with the offense. Jacob liked the running attack, said get Sneed the ball. Parker mentioned being Tank Dell's birthday for this one, had birthday boy bombs away. Williams had sloppy but getting better. Aaron, one of my favorites, had numbers 21 play well. That was Batee for USF and Sneed for U of H. And ending on a bummer of one, just to be that guy, Kelsey asks, where are the fans? And I would agree with that one. That was a rather disappointing fan turnout, I think it has to be said.
Yeah, I would very much agree with that. I mean, and mine on a couple, I wouldn't say critical ones, but ones that weren't as cheery, though I think good and worthy of inclusion. Scott had defense still needs improvement. I think we would both co-sign that. Scott and EA had pushed game time back. Yeah, I'm not going to give the fan base a pass for what I think was a smaller crowd than this team deserved, but do hate those 11 a.m. kicks. I guess I like them. Now that I live a long distance away and I can just roll out of bed at 9 a.m. and watch the game with the cover still on me, but don't really love getting the stadium at 11 a.m. I think I've done that enough in my lifetime to feel that way. So great forward reviews, guys. Nice to read some of these coming off a win rather than some of the performances this year.
I was up till like 2 a.m. on Friday night, and I am not of an age where I like staying up till 2 a.m. anymore, and I got my butt to the stadium at 11 a.m. on Saturday, so no excuses. I don't want to hear any of it, but either way, we'll put a bow on the USF game, and let's take a look around the college football week that was, which began in terms of interesting results for me, Sam, on Friday with a nice win for East Carolina over BYU, 27-24 on a last-second field goal. Pirates improved to 6-3 overall with a conference loss to Navy that continues to not make a lot of sense, as well as the loss to Tulane. They do play Cincinnati and Houston the next 2 weeks before closing with Temple, so I think they very much have an opportunity to play their way into the AAC title game conversation with two losses if they went out, Sam. But obviously didn't help their case here with a non-conference win over BYU. But you know, I think an indication that this is a Pirate team that has to be taken seriously.
Yeah, I would agree with that one. I think it was kind of, you know, after that opening loss to NC State, as heartbreaking as it was like, okay, well, they were playing so close with a preseason top 25 team that had they gotten average place kicking, they would have gotten that big in-state power five win. And yeah, that really flummoxing result against Navy. But yeah, the last 2 weeks of beating a UCF team that's still as kind of up and down as they are, looks like one of the better teams in this conference. And I think BYU isn't playing their best football this time of year, but I don't think anyone should have a win in Provo nitpicked. And yeah, good win for ECU. I think it's kind of been a roller coaster with them. I think we both believe they could be kind of a dark horse, upper part of the league team, and they maybe reevaluated that a few weeks ago, and now I think I'm back to kind of where it was in the preseason on the Pirates, and thinking that I don't think they're one of the, you know, creme de la creme contenders, but I don't think they're far off from it.
All right, then getting into Saturday's games. I'll start with a game that was very close before. Three games that were, there were not one, not two, but three games that were not especially close, that I just like kept double, triple checking, expecting the result to be different. We'll get to those in a little bit. We'll start with more, maybe the more expecting one, which was expected a close game between Central Florida and Cincinnati. That's what we got. UCF winning 25-21 in what was kind of an ugly, disjointed game for a lot of the game. It saw only two total touchdowns between both teams for the first 55 minutes of the game, and then three touchdowns in the final five. Mikey Keene comes in at quarterback for UCF in the absence of John Rhys Plumlee. I thought looked, you know, pretty good, I would say, against a pretty good Cincinnati defense, at least at times. Wasn't the prettiest offensive game for anybody, really, as mentioned, but, you know, as rough as Plumlee has been throwing the ball this year, I thought Keene might have given Malzahn something to think about. And, you know, for Cincinnati, their first conference loss, dropping them into a three-way tie at 3-1, along with UCF and your Houston Cougars. So, you know, kind of an ugly game, exciting finish, Sam, and now everybody is looking up at the AAC's one remaining unbeaten, the team we all expected to be the conference flagship this year, Sam, the Tulane Green Wave.
Absolutely, and I think if you want a couple stats that I think kind of explain why Cincy maybe hasn't, you know, been the Cincy of recent vintage on offense, is that I think their quarterback, Ben Bryant, throwing the ball 45 times, and that their leading rusher, their highest usage running back only had 11 carries. I feel like those two tell a story. I feel like if Cincinnati is functioning as Cincinnati kind of would like to on offense, that they would be a bit more run first, that they would be able to establish that between the tackles, I think, a bit better than they've been able to, not just this week against UCF, but on the year as a whole. And yeah, definitely not going to sneeze at Mikey Keene, your backup quarterback, getting over 8 yards an attempt against a Cincy defense, as much as they're not the insane wheat thresher that they were the previous two seasons, is still a well above average college defense. And yeah, definitely didn't have the Tulane Green Wave being your last team unbeaten in conference play going into November.
All right, and speaking of surprising results, like I said, three of them that I was just blown away by, and I think you've got to start with Kansas State blanking Oklahoma State 48-0. I mean, what? The shutout in the first place, and then scoring 48 points with backup quarterback Will Howard. I mean, what? I was at the OU-Texas game this year. I thought for sure that was going to be the most shocking, just absolute bloodbath of a shutout in Big 12 play this year, and I think it got one-upped. And I don't think the final score was quite as many. I don't remember the final score. I've somewhat memory-holed that already, but yeah, 48-0. So if you had told me that was how this game was going to go, I would have not believed you in the least.
Even the 48 would have been kind of surprising, but it's like, okay, well, Kansas State.
Yeah.
Kansas State is kind of hot and cold. They have their moments at home, but the zero, I think the zero is the most jarring to me in a game full of surprising and jarring things. And again, not really a surprising result that Oklahoma State would lose this game in Manhattan. They're pretty beat up. Kansas State has been, you know, as we've talked about, pretty good at home, but 48-0, wouldn't have believed it was even theoretically possible. A very, very surprising loss. As much as, you know, Oklahoma State is still a 6-2 team at this point with some good wins, it's hard for that kind of loss not to take the wind out of your sails a bit, you know?
Yeah, that is got to be a little bit deflating and hard to bounce back from. That is, I guess, one of those character testing losses. When you lose 48-0, you find out what you're made of. And I guess now both Oklahoma schools have had their shocking shutout loss. And I mean, the Sooners bounced back pretty well from theirs, so maybe that means the Cowboys will be able to do the same the rest of the way. We will find out. But yeah, going with the surprising results, and this is one that maybe slipped under the radar if you're not keeping eyes on our nerd brothers across town. But Rice got stomped by Charlotte at home, 56-23. The 49ers were 1-7, had just fired their coach. The Owls were 2-1 in Conference USA play with what felt like a pretty reasonable hope of making a CUSA title game run. Had been looking pretty good. And they led 14-7 after the first quarter. Everything was going according to plan. No problem until Charlotte outscored them 42-3. In the next two quarters, and it wasn't like a ton of turnovers either or anything like that. Rice just could not stop Charlotte's offense to save its life and couldn't move the ball either. Just I've just been have been kind of, you know, holding some outside hope that the that Rice was going to make a nice little run here with the reasonably impressive season that they've had, but That one was pretty hard to explain, losing to a bad Charlotte team by 33 points at home.
And that was kind of your roadmap if you're Rice to get to six wins, that you had Charlotte, who just fired their coach, won one game, had looked like one of the worst teams in Division I today, and just to get spanked on your home field, probably not what a lot of the, you know, the Owls fans were expecting there. And it gets kind of brutal from here. I mean, you do have UTEP at home on this coming Thursday night. That's pretty winnable, even as bad as last Saturday looked. But UTSA, Western Kentucky, and North Texas have all looked like much better teams than Rice, even when Rice is playing at its best this year. So I really feel, I'm not saying Rice has no chance to, you know, getting to that six win goal, but it's a lot harder to see, not just because of the content of this game, but just I have a hard time talking myself into Rice winning on Western Kentucky's field or on North Texas's field, given what those teams have shown themselves to be this year.
All right. And then my final, just like double take result was Louisville routing a top 10 Wake Forest team 48-21. Didn't really watch this one, so I can't say too much about it, but afterwards noticed the Cardinals forced 8 turnovers in this game. There is just like frustrating, infuriating losses, and then in there is watching your top 10 school lose to a pretty mediocre to be friendly team while committing 8 turnovers, Sam.
The box score is just insanely wild in this one. If you look at just the first, second, and fourth quarters, Dustin, Wake Forest actually outscored the Cardinals 21-13. Problem there being Louisville outscored the visiting Demon Deacons 35-0. In the third quarter. That's a rough day at the office. I'm going to just mention really quickly and then mention nothing else about this game because it sounds like just an absolute atrocity of a football game. Miami and Virginia played to four overtimes. They played to four overtimes and no one registered a single touchdown. The game was actually won on it got to the four overtimes. So as Cougar fans well know, you have the dueling 2-point conversions thing that we saw in the opener, in the win against UTSA. That was only won by Miami finally getting one of those 2-point conversions and Virginia not being able to answer. So again, talked about this game way too much, but I couldn't talk about this week and not talk about the absolute car crash that was a 4-overtime game that didn't get a single touchdown scored.
I remember seeing that on Saturday, and I just forgot to put it in my notes. I'm glad you did, because what a glorious disaster of a game that was. Speaking of which, you know, I'm only going to briefly mention it just because I gave you great gambling advice if you listened to the last podcast, like I always do. Don't look it up. When I told you last week that did not make sense for me that the Sooners were only like 1 or 2 point favorite against Iowa State, and that Cyclone offense, pretty rough. The Sooners won 27-13, so like I said, 100% of the time, perfect gambling advice. If you listen to this podcast, do not take that seriously at all, because it's not true. But yeah, I guess I would be dishonest. I'd like to sweep that under the rug, Sam, but I'm going to come back here and take my medicine and mention that this Iowa State team is not looking so hot.
I'm glad you mentioned that game, only because if you haven't seen it already, it's definitely worth your time. Go look up the Oklahoma fake field goal touchdown from this game, because it's just a fantastic example of a kicker laying his body on the line to get that last yard and get the touchdown there. And I love fake field goal calls, against your clones, Dustin. It's a good football play worth looking up. Hate those at the expense of your secondary team.
Yeah, no, it was very nice. And as much as Iowa State played well defensively in this one and has played well defensively most of the year, you know, sometimes the other team just establishes their kicker between the tackles. There's not a lot you can do. So what are you going to do? And that's, I think, going to take us into, Sam, unless there are any other games from Saturday you wanted to mention. Are you ready to talk some Cougs and Mustangs for one last freaking time?
Let's talk some Cougs and Mustangs for one last freaking time, Dustin.
Let's do it. Cougs take on SMU in Dallas on Saturday evening. You know, heading into the season, Sam and I begrudgingly named SMU the team most likely to threaten the future Big 12 schools for AAC supremacy in 2022. And they aren't technically out of the AAC title race, but at 4-4 overall, 2-2 in conference play, definitely hasn't been the breakout season that first-year head coach Rhett Lashley was hoping for, and they've already lost to both of the other future Big 12 schools already, so this is their last chance to get one of those wins and to maintain the kind of like we talked about with ECU. You got two conference losses, you still have the chance to win out and get yourself into contention, especially they play Houston, could give Houston their second loss, they play Tulane, they could give the Greenies a loss, so, you know, if they do win out, I think not too many other results that they need to go their way to share a shot at the AAC title game. But I think the reason for that 4-4 record and the reason that they need to find four straight wins and hope for other results to go their way at this point is the same reason why SMU has only had two winning AAC campaigns since joining the conference and has never been to an AAC title game, because they can always score points in bunches, but their defense just can't keep up the end of the bargain. And I mean, the offense has gone out at times too this year, to be fair. They only scored 19 points in a loss to UCF. They only gained 259 yards in a loss to Cincinnati. But it's still an SMU team that scares me with this offense, especially with the inconsistencies of the Cougar defense that we've just been talking about, with the injuries that the Cougar defense has been dealing with, throughout the season and up to this point as well. But, you know, even on the road, even with this flawed Cougar team, this is a winnable game. It's a win that I desperately, desperately want, Sam, almost as much as I desperately want it to be the last time that we ever play SMU in football.
So I have this at the end of my notes, but I think you've kind of led me into this question. I'm very curious about your answer. So hypothetical, Dustin, would you trade, no other knowledge about what happens here, but would you trade me guaranteeing that this Cougar team is not going to make the conference championship game if it meant that we destroyed SMU on Saturday? I'm going to say nothing else. I'm not going to say we didn't make the conference championship game because we lost to Temple or something. We just nothing else. Just not make the conference championship game if it meant we destroyed SMU on Saturday. Because I'll answer it. I will say I'll answer it first. I'd take it. I would absolutely take it if you could guarantee me that we were going to just humiliate SMU and have that be the last game of this head-to-head on Saturday. That's just me, though. I don't want to color your opinion there. But that's if you're worried about saying yes, don't worry. Your co-host has already thrown himself in front of that train.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, if that does, so if that does happen, if we drill SMU and then we don't go to the AAC title game, it almost positively means that we lose at East Carolina, which would be kind of a gut punch. You're going into the second last game of the season. Yeah. Having a real good shot, that means that you lose. But, you know, like, I can't hate East Carolina football the way that I loathe a lot of the teams in our conference. And, like, their fans in Greenville deserve to have a good season. And, like, you know, I get less mad watching ECU celebrate a win over us than I would watching, you know, a bunch of SMU frat bros celebrating a win over us. So, yeah, I don't know. That's, I hate to give up the shot at winning the AAC on the way out, but, I think I have to say no to that. I don't think I can. I think at the end of the day, no, I want to see this. I feel like this team has a shot at the AAC title game, and I can't pass that up. But I so badly want to beat this SMU team. They I feel like I said every week about I don't want to play this team ever again. Don't want to play Nate. You missed me because I wasn't here. You didn't get my chance to say you and Bobby were talking about no, never. We should never play Navy ever again. I've seen us play all three of the service academies now as a Cougar fan, and I don't need us to schedule any of them. And I know I have all the respect in the world. I love watching Service Academy football when they are not playing my school. Please, let's never put any of them on the schedule. I forgot where I was. I don't know how we got from talking to SMU about the SMU game to talking about Service Academy football, but I'm going to say no, Sam. I would not. I want to see this team beat SMU and go to the AAC title game.
That's fair. I definitely had to think about that some, but I thought it was an interesting hypothetical to discuss here. To get to SMU, they are a very good passing offense for what feels like the umpteenth year in a row since Sonny Dykes got there. And I think the problem, though, is they have less ability to be balanced than they were the prior two seasons. You still have Tanner Mordecai, good veteran quarterback, as good of a passer as there is in this league. You still have Rashee Rice, who he's putting the Tank Dell usage numbers from last year to shame. I don't know if you saw this, Dustin. Rashee Rice, 62 receptions at this point. Very good. Good every metric you can assess a receiver in. Right now, on October 31st, 2022, no other SMU receiver has more than 17 receptions this year. And I've watched a decent amount of SMU football, so I've seen Rashee Rice be a very heavy part of their offense, but I didn't realize that it was so skewed to him. But I think it would also be very simplistic if I went on here and said, oh yeah, well, all you have to do is shut down Rashee Rice, because that's been the scouting report for everybody that's seen SMU this year. And while some defenses have done better than others, they still have put up quite good passing numbers. But again, kind of like I said at the start, I think their problem is an inability to balance that. Maybe tendency-wise, they were somewhat pass first last year, but when the offense was at its best a year ago and Dykes' last year was when they had Ulysses Bentley IV healthy, when they were able to not just kill you with Tanner Mordecai throwing the ball, but that they had a good ground game with Bentley the fourth, with Trey Siggers, who I believe will be out hurt for this one, Tyler Levine and other guys, TJ McDaniel situationally as well. And that just hasn't been them this year. They've been a good passing offense, but I would say by any definition, pretty one-dimensional, and that defense hasn't taken a step forward. They've been pretty awful against the run. Their pass defense has had its moments, though. I think one kind of red mark is that allowing 300 plus passing yards to UCF, who hasn't exactly been a consistent passing offense to date. So obviously an opposing offense with a good veteran quarterback against this Cougar secondary, which we've talked about in this episode, is not this team's strongest point. We've seen what this team looks like against some good pass first offenses. So I guess if nothing else, it's good that this won't be your first time seeing a passing offense that's one going to go up tempo, is going to want to throw more downs than not. It's not at least a new experience for this defense, though. Whether they can stop them, I think very much an open question. I think this is a game where the over is not going to be exactly safe. But I think when I looked at this game, what really interested me most, Austin, is that these two teams are kind of mirror images of each other in a key area. SMU, although the Cougars have been better in this area, I will say the Cougars have done better at flipping the script here the past couple weeks. SMU has been, on the aggregate this year, a team that's done really well starting strong and hasn't really finished the best. And that's been kind of the opposite of what the Cougars did this year. So I'll be curious if SMU, against this opponent, I think it actually helps the Cougars that U of H doesn't come into this game as, you know, 7-1, 8-0, top 25 team that's looking like they have the inside track to the AAC title game and to the NY6 spot for the group of five teams. But I still think you're going to get this SMU team's full attention. You're going to get an opponent's full attention, regardless if they're an in-state opponent with, you know, guys on both rosters who probably played high school ball against each other, all the stuff that comes with an in-state rival. But you beat an opponent like the Cougars beat SMU last year, that's going to stick in some craws. This is going to be a game that, for all the talk of 1 week at a time, yada, 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 you got to think SMU's team has had this one mentally circled since about 365 days ago.
Oh, for sure. And I think that's, you know, for a number of reasons, that's the way that last year went. That's the, you know, the it being the last matchup of this rivalry, and SMU certainly feeling, you know, maybe somewhat unrealistically, given that the many limitations of that school, feeling hard done by not getting scooped up in conference realignment. So, you know, I think there's a lot of emotions there, and a lot of times when we talk about how the matchups likely play out, you know, when you see games that are going to have this much emotion in them, this much juice in them, they quite often don't play out the way that you expect them to. And, you know, we just talked about how USF was kind of the exception this year, and that if you took the matchups and, you know, random, that it kind of played out exactly the way that you would have expected. So while certainly I have some thoughts that I'm going to share here about how I kind of anticipate the SMU game going, it's an important thing to begin with. And like, hey, this is a big rivalry game. This is, you know, two schools that genuinely don't like each other, to, you know, I think sets of players that genuinely don't like the other school and are going to really, really, really want to get one over on them one last time before they split off conference-wise. But yeah, very interested to see, you know, what Tanner Mordecai is able to do at quarterback, obviously coming off of a big season, 3,600 yards, 39 touchdowns. I thought it had been kind of interesting that Preston Stone had been getting some the playing time this year, the redshirt freshman, but then in SMU's most recent game, Mordecai didn't clear concussion protocol in time, missed the game, and then Stone got the start, and then I believe broke his collarbone halfway through the game. They went on to the third stringer, true freshman Kevin Jennings, who came in to finish off the win over Tulsa, but looks like Mordecai is widely expected to be back. So it is kind of all a wash, and we'll expect to see Tanner Mordecai out there. But, you know, kind of like you mentioned, this, it feels like a more maybe one-dimensional SMU offense than kind of what we've seen with the focus on Rashee Rice being such a big part of it. And, you know, if this was a previous version of a Cougar defense where we had a lockdown corner that, you know, or two that we could put on Rice, where it's like, okay, you know, hey, I know that, you know, even Marcus Jones or, you know, Damarian Williams, maybe, you know, last year, put him on Rashee Rice, this version of Rashee Rice, not going to hold him to two catches, not going to hold him to under, you know, 40 yards or anything crazy like that in all likelihood, but you had the kind of guy that you could put on Rashee Rice and feel like he wasn't going to single-handedly, just, you know, break you and break your will. I'm less sure that Houston has the cornerback or the you know, combination of cornerbacks and defensive backs to throw at Rashee Rice on Saturday. They're going to prevent Rice from just absolutely going off, having some monster game, and you know, more or less, you know, single-handedly winning this one for SMU and making things difficult. So it is a game that, you know, just, and like I said, when you have those rivalry games, crazy things happen. So definitely an offensive that, you know, because like I said, you've seen the games, the UCF game, the Cincinnati, you've seen good defenses, I think, really frustrate SMU offensively this year, but just not sure that that U of H has the defense this year to want to pull that one off.
And even last year's defense with a couple of future NFL cornerbacks did at times not look the best against SMU, though I think you did see from last year's game, you know, SMU, I think, starting to kind of get one-dimensional. Bentley wasn't healthy for that game last year. You kind of saw the beginning of what you've seen this year when SMU hasn't really been. They're still a good offense. There's still an offense that, to be clear, I don't think matches up too well from a Cougars perspective from what we expect to see. They're an offense that's going to attack this Cougar defense's, I think, most glaring general weakness. But again, unlike last year, and in last year's game, I think what really hurt that SMU team when they played at TDECU was they just didn't have a run game that could take pressure off that. There were times where they burned U of H, but there were also times where the inability to do anything but throw the ball did hamper them. You're not going to, I think, go out there. You know, we've seen some good defenses frustrate SMU. I don't know if you're going to be able to go out there and do what those good defenses did. But you also don't have to be that good. I think this Cougar offense, what we've seen the last few weeks against some not very good defenses, and spoiler alert, they're going to be playing a not very good defense again this coming Saturday, I think should give you at least some kind of confidence that the Cougars, like I just said with SMU attacking U of H's weakness, that the Cougars are themselves, I think, capable of putting up points and putting up yardage against this specific SMU team. I wanted to save this till near the end. I thought this was kind of a weird and interesting stat, Dustin. SMU's opponents this year are averaging an almost identical penalty yardage per game to the Cougars' season average. And that kind of, I think, begs the question. We know that penalties and penalty yardage, that's one of the big weaknesses of this Cougar team. That's something that has kind of reared its ugly head and hampered the Cougars' ability to do things on both sides of the ball this season. But if SMU is already getting that average per game, the SMU is already getting on the aggregate 81 penalty yards per game against their opponent, and they're still only 4-4 against that slate, can they take advantage of that against the Cougars? I mean, I think it's a fair question to ask. If their opponents are regularly getting, at least on the average, penalized way above average, and I don't know, is that something that they can take advantage of against the Cougars? And can they take advantage of it? You know, I think a Cougar team that at least the 2 weeks prior on the road, and you can torture data from small sample sizes and get almost any point you want to get, but I thought the 2 previous road games were 2 of the Cougars' better discipline efforts of the season. Memphis wasn't perfect, but you saw in that one down the stretch, the Cougars, I think, able to make that crazy comeback happen in large part because they played fairly clean football in the second half of that game. And against Navy, against an opponent that prides itself on discipline, I thought the Cougars were definitely the more disciplined team a couple Saturdays ago in Annapolis. So I don't think I'm expecting the Cougars to have 1-2 penalties in Dallas, but I don't know. Just seeing that stat, and you don't let one stat really color how you feel about a game too much, it made me feel a little bit more confident about this game, that U of H doesn't have to play a perfect game, that U of H can do some of the things we've seen this team do this year and still, I think, have a good chance of leaving Dallas the winner.
Yeah, I think the penalties are an X factor there for sure. And I think also it's, you know, the big question is Houston going to keep that offensive momentum going? We talked about liking what we saw at the end of Memphis game, liking what we saw in the Navy game, and, you know, against, you know, quality of opponent, notwithstanding what we saw against USF. And this is an SMU defense that you'd throw them into the category of not very good defenses. And kind of you would expect this Cougar offense playing the way that they're playing, you know, against an SMU defense that has been susceptible to some big passing yardage, has only had 4 interceptions as a team this year, and that has just given up, you know, after holding North Texas and Lamar to some paltry point totals, bad teams to begin the season. In the six games since then, they've given up 34, 42, 41, 34, 29, 34 points. It's not a team that's, the one opponent that they've held under 30, they held to 29 points. So not an SMU defense that you'd think Houston should be struggling with. They've been susceptible to the run. They've been susceptible to the pass. The one thing that I think you can say is they've created a large number of tackles for loss. They've created some negative plays, and it's a very decentralized 56.5 total tackles for loss as a team. No one player with more than six. So I don't think there is one player that you can really focus in on this defense and prevent them from maybe creating some negative plays. But I think that this should be really ideally a scenario not too dissimilar from what we saw last week against USF. I think this is a little bit better defense than USF, but I think this is a defense that Houston, they're not going to score every single possession. They're going to, likely hurt themselves with some penalties. Likely SMU is going to break up some plays and create some negative plays. But this is a SMU defense, Sam, that I think Clayton Tune and this Cougar offense should expect to be scoring points against fairly consistently.
Yeah, I would just say it would definitely be a red flag if we are talking about this game in the coming week and it wasn't a good offensive effort. This should at very least be a game where the offense moves the ball. It might be a shootout where the Cougars ultimately lose. I think that's not an unrealistic scenario, but this can't be a game where the Cougars struggle to get to 30 points. It shouldn't be a game where the Cougars struggle to get to 30 points. And that's not a knock on the opposition. I guess it's a knock on the opposition, but I feel like it's a knock on the opposition that is backed by evidence, is backed by what SMU has actually done on the field this year. But again, worth reiterating, it's very TBD if this Cougar defense, given that SMU is going to want to throw the ball, given that the Cougars have struggled preventing passing generally, preventing big passing plays. Yeah, I think it's going to be a challenge. If you like high-scoring, pointsy football, I would expect this to be the definition of high-scoring, pointsy football on Saturday.
All right, I don't really have any other bullet points left for this game, so I'm just going to end by, I think, kind of repeating something we've said, which is good riddance to SMU football. There has been no school in our current conference whose fan base I respect less than SMU's. Good riddance, maybe. We never play them. Just the absolute of the many, many, many things that are just beautiful about moving from the American Athletic to the conference to the Big 12. Literally none is better than, in terms of in-state foes, leaving SMU behind and moving on to Texas Tech, TCU, and Baylor. So good riddance to the Ponies. Glad to be in a different class from them going forward, like we deserve to be all along. And may Saturday's game be one last Cougar W in the series.
Yeah, as bad as a loss would feel being the final game, and my tongue is spitting involuntarily even speaking that into existence. Nothing would feel as bad as the thought of being in a conference with SMU longer than this season. So no matter how bad any completely hypothetical loss Saturday feels, just know that not playing SMU is still its own nice little treat, and just seeing the back of this program, hopefully for good on the football field.
As I said, looking at the history on the UH Cougar website, Houston 22-13-1 all time versus SMU. So regardless of the result on Saturday, Houston moves on to the better conference, having clearly gotten the better of the Ponies all time. And that will take us into the college football week to come. And we finally got the full week. If you are a fan of Maction, we've got Tuesday and Wednesday football this week, including into the MAC football, big MAC East matchup between 4-0 Buffalo, 3-1 Ohio. And man, Sam, I know that the fun of Maction is that they're all bad and that's what makes it fun, I guess. But the fact that your two top East teams are 4-0 Buffalo, 3-1 Ohio, and Buffalo, we've lost a Holy Cross in non-conference play, and Ohio somehow gave up 43 points and got clobbered by an Iowa State team that can't seem to score any points on anybody else. So that's maybe not the best advertisement for MAC football, but I guess that's never the point that they're really that great. So the point is you get to watch college football on Tuesday and Wednesday this week if you are so depraved.
I love that we both have completely different bummer takes about Max, and yours is the teams aren't very good. And I'm just, for me, I like in abstract having football on a Tuesday or Wednesday night if I want it, but I don't know, as maybe as I've aged as a sports fan, I kind of just more feel bad for those fan bases, Dustin. I mean, unless you like live in very close proximity, and a number of these are college towns that, you know, aren't super far from the major metro, but I would imagine most of Kent State's alums don't live in the immediate proximity of the campus. I mean, if you're someone who's really into that team, to rearrange your schedule to do a game on a Tuesday or Wednesday night and just having, I would imagine, a pretty not great in-stadium atmosphere in the service of questionably rated Tuesday or Wednesday night football games, I think I would rather have my team get buried on ESPN Plus or something and play on a Saturday than to get the nationally televised Tuesday or Wednesday game. I don't know. Maybe Mac fans feel differently, but the more I see the games, the more I'm just like, yeah, we think Maction is cool, but has anyone like stopped to ask whether any of these teams actually enjoy the pain in the ass of playing on Tuesday or Wednesday? I don't know. That's my downer take about Maction. I'm glad we covered all the bases there, as much as I will probably at least be checking in both these nights. I don't know. My enthusiasm for Maction, not the same as it maybe was 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah, I tend to agree, and maybe there needs to be a middle ground of just getting them, you know, one or two Maction middle games a week, and then also getting them some conference games on Saturdays when you know, college football is meant to be played.
No doubt.
But speaking of college football during the middle of the week, Thursday sees, Sam mentioned it briefly earlier, UTEP Rice, which should be a competitive game, but I think that's got to be second screen action to a much better App State Coastal Carolina, really nice matchup there. Two you know, really good teams. Big Sun Belt East implications here, Sam. Should be a fun one, App State and Coastal.
Yeah, that's a good one. I will say with that UTEP-Rice game, if I was still living in the greater Houston area and didn't have conflicting plans, I don't know, man. I might be tempted to head over to campus, maybe get a bite and a drink in the Village, and then walk over and see some very mediocre Conference USA football. I guess it's Houston, so you know, early November can be just absolutely gorgeous or 40 degrees and spitting down rain. I don't know if I have that kind of stomach for the Village and Rice football and 40 degrees and spitting rain. But yeah, App State Coastal, I think, rises above the standard of what would you call it? Game you can watch as background. I think that might actually be a good football game if you're looking for it on Thursday night.
It's a value above replacement college football game is actually a significant positive number, which is probably not something you could say for UTEP Rice.
Probably not.
Probably not something you could say also for the two Friday evening games, which are Duke Boston College and UMass UConn, but definitely something I would say about the Friday night game. 9:30 kick, so probably a pain in the butt if you live in the Central Time Zone to really catch this one. But Oregon State at Washington, two pretty solid teams, 6-2 teams trying to stay alive in the Pac-12 race. Feels like that one could be pretty fun.
Yeah, that's good. Good late Friday night football if you want some of it all. I think it's good to see that matchup. I would worry that matchup that you described, I was actually, I have my score app open right now, not because I didn't do notes, but because I don't have the networks in my typed notes. And I was certain when I clicked on that, I was like, it's going to say Pac-12 Network and I'm going to have to edit out a profanity on there. But no, it's on ESPN Plus, which I think is actually cool and should be a decent late night football game.
Yeah, then Saturday, the surprise 10:30 kick, and that is Air Force at Army. The Falcons with a chance to wrap up the Commander-in-Chief's trophy with a win here after having already beaten Navy earlier in the year. So as someone with a relative Air Force, formerly in the Air Force, got to root for the Falcons there. Always fun to watch. Like I said, as long as they're not playing my team, love watching Academy football. So, and love the 10:30 kick, which gives them a half an hour to get started before everyone else does. So we'll definitely be tuned into that one on Saturday morning.
Yeah, and it's not the strongest 11 a.m. Central slate as well. Tulane at Tulsa are going to kind of set alerts on that one. If it's close, maybe tune in. But there's a decent chance that, given what the Greenies and Golden Hurricane have been respectively this year, that might not be especially close. Kind of ditto for Texas Tech at TCU. Kind of a mini controversy. I don't know if you caught it earlier in the season, Dustin, but TCU has gone to great lengths to prevent the many and numerous, I believe that's their biggest alumni base, actually, Dallas-Fort Worth Texas Tech alums from buying up all the tickets to Amon G. Carter Stadium for that game. But given what those two teams have been, not necessarily a compelling enough matchup for me to recommend it for your big screen, but I don't know, maybe set alerts and see if Tech is the team that solves TCU this year.
Yeah, I've got both of those games on the, you know, keep them on the alerts. Tulane Tulsa, it's like, it feels weird to have to keep alerts on that one, both A, because I don't think it's going to be that close, and also because it's Tulane Tulsa, but hey, Tulane's 4-0 in the conference. You got to keep an eye on them. I guess it's only fair. Definitely keeping an eye on the 1 o'clock game, USF at Temple. Oh my gosh, no, I can't believe. No, what have I said? What am I doing? No, I mean, I guess someone's got to win. So, you know, it's pretty remarkable, Sam, that South Florida, a team who it's been well documented now under their current head coach is 1-25 against the FBS. They are on the road in the 3-point favorites on Saturday. That is not the biggest compliment to Temple, who of course is the one team that Jeff Scott has beaten.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely nothing either of us say is betting advice, and I think you would go very broke trying to bet South Florida this year. I don't know, that backdoor cover against U of H might actually be proving me wrong there, but I'm kind of surprised. And again, acknowledging that USF is a terrible defensive team that is 1-7 this year is playing their backup quarterback, I still feel like I've watched enough of them and enough of Temple to feel pretty comfortable that USF is going to win a bad, ugly game. Like, USF has at least been good at times this year on one side of the ball at times. And that's been an offense that actually I think was top 60 in SP Plus going to the game on Saturday at U of H. And Temple has just been really atrocious on both sides of the ball, though I guess, again, you could probably go pretty broke trying to hope on USF doing good things this year.
All right, Sam, and then the middle of the afternoon is really where the meat of this slate is by far. I count 3, 4, 5 games in the 2:30 window that I will be having score alerts on for. And, you know, I guess we'll start by just being total normies and just at least mentioning, yes, Tennessee is at Georgia. Number two at number one. Again, not going to go out of my way to exhort you to watch SEC football, but it's at least fun that when, you know, you see 1 versus 2 in the SEC, that it's not Georgia and Alabama. There's at least one of the two teams is different, so I guess that's nice. And, you know, it's 1 versus 2, so you got to, at least as a curious college football fan, at least have alerts on for it, I guess.
Yeah, I think that Tennessee offense versus Georgia defense matchup should be pretty fun. That is a Tennessee offense that, I guess, proven they're more than just, okay, they can pile up stats against the not-so-great SEC teams and then kind of go missing against the better ones. I mean, what they did against Alabama, I think, should at least give you enough justification to have that on one of your TVs. I know that's a real strong recommendation of a regular season 1 versus 2 matchup. Understand why you would tune in, even if we're not going to generally endorse SEC football.
And then an important matchup in the 2:30 window for the AAC title race is UCF. I keep calling them Central Florida. They don't like that.
They will hunt you down 12 minutes into this if they catch you calling themselves Central Florida, even though Central Florida is 2/3 of their damn university's name. But that's an aside.
Regardless, the football team from UCF is playing at Memphis. Tigers with 3 losses out of the AAC title race picture, but definitely good enough to play spoiler, especially at home. And I think even with a top 25 UCF team who is just coming off that win over Cincinnati, I think that there are enough imperfections and inconsistencies in that team that it's, you know, not really surprising to me that Vegas only has them as 3-point favorites, even on the road at a 4-4 Memphis team.
Yeah, warts and all for Memphis. I think this UCF team has just been too volatile. You don't know if John Rhys Plumlee is going to be able to play this week unless I missed an injury update there. But even at 6-2, even at a deserved number 25 in this week's poll, I'm not wildly confident. I certainly wouldn't bet hard-earned American money that UCF is going to for sure come out of the Liberty Bowl as a winner on Saturday. And yeah, a game with big conference title implications, as you said. Really probably Memphis's last hope of salvaging even a decent season. Even as they're out of the title race. Really, Ryan Silverfield's last chance maybe for a signature win that could make the Tiger athletic brass, I think, consider a fourth year of him, if we're being honest as well.
All right, and then from our current conference to our future conference in that 2:30 slot, really just interesting bounce back game that I'm really intrigued to see how these two teams handle is going to be Oklahoma State at Kansas. We just talked about the pantsing that the Cowboys got. The Jayhawks are coming off of 3 straight losses, so, you know, very soon to see in terms of who plays at quarterback. Spencer Sanders looks, I believe, is out for this one. Jalen Daniels, I think, has been warming up recently, but I don't believe has gotten back into the game yet. So, but, you know, it seems like he might be maybe back. Questionable for this one, so very curious to see who plays in this one, but ultimately, you know, who also is able to get a bounce back win that's going to have them feeling good about themselves again versus who is going to feel kind of like they're in a bit of a free fall.
Yeah, a win here for Kansas would get them to the mark for bowl eligibility, which considering the slate down the stretch is at Texas Tech, hosting the Cal College in Austin, although that's been one that they've regularly won. I don't know if you know this, Dustin. Kansas has beaten Texas in football a couple times in the last 5 or 6 years, and a trip to Manhattan in the regular season finale that is going to be quite difficult, even if Kansas is back at anything close to full health. So I think it would be a relief for much of Jayhawk fandom if they were able to get to 6 wins on Saturday against Oklahoma State team that I think, yeah, no doubt reeling after that absolute butt kicking in Manhattan a Saturday ago.
All right, and then another Big 12 game. Really should not spend any time on it, but, you know, Iowa State hosting West Virginia.
Maybe I knew you were going to squeeze that Big 12 win this year.
There's somehow 7-point favorites. I'm just going to throw it in there for Big 12 news because if Iowa State wins that game, I might get Neil Brown fired. But that's my pitch at making this a relevant Big 12 game, at least a little bit.
Somebody's got to win it.
But moving right along, the only other game I was going to mention was our old friends, the Roadrunners of UTSA. The only remaining unbeaten team in Conference USA play will be at UAB. You know, UAB team that's kind of down, but, you know, I think playing in Birmingham, it's a tough one. And the fact that UTSA only a 1-point favorite in this one, from what I've seen, means that should be a fun, interesting game and certainly be pulling for UTSA to keep a strong season going.
Yep, I think that's all I have from that time slot as well.
All right, and then going up against the Cougs, really the only game that's really that interesting to me is UT Austin at Kansas State. Would certainly hope to see the Wildcats keep that momentum from last weekend going. Hopefully they'll feel a little disrespected as the number 13 team hosting an unranked team, and they are 2.5-point underdogs. But yeah, definitely hoping to see the Wildcats give the Longhorns a third conference loss to effectively eliminate them from the Big 12 title game. But, you know, I think definitely two programs that are going to be feeling pretty good about themselves and the way that they've been playing football recently heading into this one.
Yeah, I would agree with that one, and I think I'll be curious to see Quinn Ewers, who I don't want to give any kind of endorsement of the Burnt Orange team's personnel, but a guy certainly I think has earned some hype against the Kansas State defense. This has been quite good, especially when they've been playing in Manhattan. I think that will be an interesting matchup to watch. I would love to give you a better endorsement of a game in the evening. The only other thing that might be decent, it just makes me ill to recommend another SEC game, but Bama at LSU could be interesting. I don't know. If there was a better one in this time slot, believe me, I would try and recommend it, but just can't really get there for Wake Forest, NC State. Can't really get too excited for Michigan Rutgers. It's kind of slim pickings other than the two games that we've already mentioned in the evening. And obviously, of course, your Cougars, which I guess it's a blessing in disguise, since if you're listening to this, you will almost certainly be focused on the Cougar game in Dallas in some form or fashion. Not a whole lot, I think, should be competing for your attention in this specific time slot.
I just kind of feel like Alabama's going to grind LSU into pace. I just don't think the Tigers are...
Yeah.
I know it's in Baton Rouge, but still, I guess I should have alerts on that one on just in case it ends up being close. Because certainly, I mean, if the Tigers make that one close, that'll be a insane atmosphere and be worth tuning in. And I'd love nothing more than for the Crimson Tide to take a second loss and hopefully knock them out of playoff contention this year. Which, although, you know, I'm sure that they could get in with two losses anyway. But at least make it a little bit harder for the committee to put them in. I'd love to see it, but would certainly be surprised. But I just talked about three results that absolutely floored me from this past weekend. So crazier things have happened and will continue to happen in college football. I think that is safe to say. Yeah, I guess that sounded like that was your last game, Sam. Do we have anything else? I guess we're well into this episode. It's probably go ahead and time to wrap it up. Or do you got any last thoughts or games or anything, Sam?
No, Cal, I was going to say UCLA at Arizona and Cal at USC are your best options for the late evening time slot, which should tell you the quality of this week's late evening time slot right there. Not the best games.
There you go. All right. Well, we are well over an hour into this one. We're going to have another well over an hour episode later in the week. So we'll speed run through the outro here and just say big thank you if you are a Scott Holman Patreon supporter. If you want to financially support Sam and my's weekly work covering the Cougs, you can go to shpodcast.com/support. You can get in contact with us by emailing us shpodcast@gmail.com or tweeting at us at shpodcast. That's it for us. Thank you if you made it all the way to the end of this massive media episode. And as always,
go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Vamos los Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
We ain't invited to the party. We had to kick the door in. No cap. 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 No cap.